Welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Sports fans, golf fans, or just fans, Max Homa fans maybe, welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon. I am Shane Bacon. And Max, listen, man, when we started this podcast, I knew there were going to be moments like this. But let me just say, your last missed cut, I did a little math, okay? The last time you missed a cut, I'd never heard of the term coronavirus before. So it was a long time ago. That was like forever ago, you know? So that gives people an idea. You know, everybody always goes, it was 7 years, the number one movie was this, and Titanic, all that. That's the only thing that really makes sense to me at this point was we weren't aware of coronavirus the last time you missed a cut.
Yeah, I had somebody, I've had quite a few chirpers on Twitter, and I'm going to say a lot throughout this podcast, I missed a lot of this. I missed people roasting me, but I had somebody say that I'm not allowed to roast golf swings anymore because I can't even make a cut, and I didn't respond. But I want to be like, I haven't missed a cut since October. So like I'm doing pretty well on that front. But yeah, it sucked. We hadn't missed a cut, you know, since we started the podcast. I guess I broke that trend in a very choky manner. But yeah, it had to happen. Most of my funniest tweets usually came from when I was playing the worst golf ever. So maybe this will be a great podcast.
So I write you... You made birdie. Did you make birdie on your 17th hole on Friday? Is that right?
On Friday, no. I made birdie on my 14th hole Friday to get to 2 under for the day in tournament. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd said something. You were on TV. They had you on CBS playing 18 and, or your, was 18? Is that
when
you finished?
18,
you finished 18. So you hit it in the fairway and you hit your second shot on the green. And it kind of spun back, and then
that's what Lacy said.
The coverage was done, and I wrote something on Twitter. I'm like, come on, man! Like, let's see if he runs in a snake. And then I checked the PGA Tour website like 10 minutes later, and you 3-putt missed the cut by one. I was like, oh shit! So yeah. I deleted that tweet.
Glad they panned out.
I just deleted that tweet immediately. I don't delete a lot of tweets, but I just deleted that one. I put you on 59 watch this week after you birdied the 11th hole on Thursday.
To be fair, we did that last week as well.
Did do that last week, but listen, man, I was all over the place, and it was a reminder as well to not get overly excited about certain things. But hey, I mean, I am interested to hear about the week, and there's a lot of stuff. But I just want to ask, you know, when you go through. I mean, you know, returning to golf, I mean, there's probably haven't had a break like this in a long time. When you return in there and you feel this, which is disappointment, what do you do over the weekend knowing you're kind of stuck in Texas and you're going to jump on a charter on Monday? What have you been doing? We're recording this on Saturday night. What'd you do today? And what do you plan on doing on Sunday? Because I'm assuming it's still work for you. I mean, this is still time to work on stuff and get ready for next week.
Yeah. Obviously can't, like, you know, I had a couple of friends say, are you coming home? And I was like, no, you know, I got to stay here. I mean, I could go home, but it's just a headache. Plus I'm already halfway to Hilton Head. But, yeah, you know, it was one of those weeks where I actually played quite well, you know, missed some putts, made some sloppy bogeys and pars, but, you know, I'll get this out early. I do believe that there are two types of missed cuts. There's a, I thought of this so well in my head in the shower earlier. Okay, I got it.
Okay,
there's two types of missed cuts. We're there. There's ones where you finish the round on Friday and you're like, what is going on? Or like, what just happened, basically? And there's other cuts where it was like, how did this just happen? Gotcha. And that's where I'm in. I'm in the how did this just happen? The what did this just happen? I'm very accustomed to that. I lived in that world for quite some time. And you leave thinking, okay, like tomorrow I need to go and like, readjust a little bit, maybe find a swing thought. Even people who have like a marginal week here and there will like go and be like, oh man, it's off somewhere. This week was not that type of week. So it's not like I woke up. It's not like I went to bed last night thinking, what the hell am I going to do? It was, you know, fortunately I got Joe staying here. He was like, what do you want to do tomorrow? Do you want to grind at the course or do you want to try to go somewhere else? I said, I'd rather go somewhere else, wear shorts or whatever. Fortunately, had a buddy from the web tour back in the day, Jesse Spears, He took us out to Shady Oaks, which is where Ben Hogan, you know, is famously, he has his plaque, he has his tree. It's his golf course. You know, it's an awesome place. Well, the course itself is closed. It's under renovation, but we got to play their par three course. It's got one par four, so it's a par 28, and it's in unbelievable shape, and it was great practice. We played probably like 36 holes. We played alternate shot format, best ball format, whatever, but, you know, throwing balls down, practicing, chipping, practicing little stuff, and it was a great session because a bunch of short holes. You hit some 7-irons. I think we had a 5-iron on one hole, but got to just keep doing what we've been doing in a competitive manner, make putts, you know, see the ball go in the hole, because that's kind of what I didn't do great this week. But yeah, just still grind tomorrow. We're going to, you know, I'm not sure yet if we're going to go practice at the course or we're going to go play somewhere, but basically we're just, you know, you still keep working. But like I said, this one's a little less of like a search for something. It's more of a keep doing what you're doing. Cause I really did play some solid golf. Golf's hard, guys. It's very hard. We have 155 guys here of some of the best players in the world. And, you know, I shot 1 under, I played solid. I did a lot of things really well. I think I hit 13 fairways yesterday on a really tight golf course. And you just have things that I'm not going to say didn't go my way. Like some other people had things go their way. I didn't have bad bounces, bad beats, really, you know, when you add them all up. I just couple up and downs, just not tight enough. The greens were a little slow this week, which helped it play a little easier coming to the greens, but just putting for me, I never felt super comfortable with the speeds, even though my lag putting was awesome all week until the last hole in 18. I was talking to Joe about it today. Really, I hit a lot of putts even that went to gimme. And when I hit one, I was like, right when I was watching it roll, I'm like, oh my God, that's way too much speed. And it would go close. And I had other ones where I'd be like, God, that's not going to get there. And it would go close. And so I always felt a little uneasy. I left myself too far on 18, which I'll talk about, I'm sure. But, you know, it just was like, it caught up. It's like we talk about with my hero, Jordan Spieth, which I also like to talk about how good he is again. But, when the whole thing on 12 at Augusta happened, you know, he pointed out on the No Laying Up podcast that it wasn't like it was a choke. It's just that that's what he was struggling with. And it came on a hole where you just can't do that. And mine came on a hole, which was, you know, not that I really felt that much pressure. It was weird without the fans there. It didn't feel completely intense like normal, but it was something that I had been struggling with. I was a little under the gun. I hit the putt and I swear I thought I hit it too hard and I came up 7 feet short. And it was just something I just never really, I never caught the speed, man. Like some putts I felt were faster, some were slower. I just couldn't get dial it in. It was the other reason I missed a few birdie putts. So, you know, you can chalk it up to the 18th hole, but like I wasted some shots. I bogeyed one, you know, 3-iron in my hand from a fairway bunker the first hole of the day. So I look at it, you know, I approach the weekend, sorry, with like a ton of optimism. I love where my game's at. I drove it really far and really straight. I hit my irons great. Just didn't stuff enough, didn't make enough 15 footers. And that's just golf. You know, like I said, 155 players playing here. One of the best fields I've ever been a part of. 65 make the cut. I mean, it is what it is. It wasn't a good tournament. It wasn't, obviously, I'm not trying to sugarcoat how I played. It wasn't like great golf, but it wasn't disaster. It wasn't, holy cow, I need to grind this range. I'd like to fix some things, but you know, you go out today and it's just thinking the same things and hitting it great. So, yeah, golf's, you know, hard. You got to remember that, it's, you know, this is why Tiger has been so unbelievable. He doesn't miss cuts and it seems hard to do. When I played this week, comfortable, you know, felt like everything was pretty much in order, off here and there, and you know you go home packing. So but it's definitely weird.
This is my one shot and you made bogey on the last. It's not, I mean, you were there, it's fine.
Yeah.
I will say, and we'll talk Bryson, I'm sure I would have a lot of questions about Bryson beast for you, but you know what, I didn't hear a lot of people talking about the Max Homa workout sessions during quarantine. 321 a pop, bro. I think you were seventh in the field in driving distance.
I checked that out because I've never hit it
this far. First two rounds, and the second round, you hit 13 of 14 fairways. Are you Rory 2.0?
No, God, no. So I was talking to Joe about it yesterday. We had a really interesting discussion, Joe and I, 2 years ago when we restarted working together, and we were kind of prepping to, or planning for the season. And he made a very, very good point. He said that he's not sure if I'm a bomber who's going to miss some fairways, or if I'm going to be somebody who hits it a little bit more average distance, but hits a lot of fairways. And I told him last year or whatever, 2 years ago that, or I guess it was last year, that I kind of wanted to be somebody who's in a lot of fairways because I am a very good iron player and I'm more comfortable from the fairway. I don't care what number I have in. And I've never been someone who's been great at swinging hard at a driver and hitting it very straight. So we approached it like that last year and it went well. And I was comfortable. I always felt confident off the tee because I felt like I was swinging within myself. But what I did point out to him yesterday was I'm swinging it well. Like I've been swinging it great at home. I've been playing really, really good golf. And what's weird is, you know, with my irons, whenever pretty much all the time, even if I swing really hard, let's say at a five iron, I'll hit it very, very straight. Like I'll hit it more or less. My dispersion is small, but for some reason with the driver, it gets going considerably more off the middle of the face, more curve, like just stuff that you want to do. So I don't like to swing hard. But when I get in these modes like this week where my swing really feels locked in, I feel like I can let it rip. Like I can go after it and I can actually be a bomber. I mean, I know that it was a small sample size. I took advantage of a few corners. So it made it, you know, it makes it seem like it goes a bit further. But even Joe was saying like, he hasn't seen me hit it this far. I know there was speaking of Bryson, I know on 14, there was this big thing about how I think Bryson's broken golf because he had driver over the corner at 92 right. yards in and hit a wedge to 3 feet. And I had hit driver over the corner, had 92 yards in and hit a wedge like 5 feet. So I know that I don't hit it as far as Bryson. I hit balls next to him. I'm not even close, but it was cool to see like, I can let it rip when the thing's in the slot. And I think that's what I've been working towards, where I can be somebody who can send it out there. I don't love to, like I said, it doesn't make me super comfortable or confident on the tee, but this week I saw it. I had good lines and I felt good about the driver and it was fun to hit. I don't think I could have ever imagined hitting 13 fairways out here. So that was cool. And it was good to see. Yeah. Maybe the Peloton's working. Maybe the arm just slightly shorter is picking up some speed. I mean, there might be a little bit to it. I'm not really sure, but yeah, it was.
Are you
going to
write a book about this? Like this is the Max Homa workout. You should do Instagram videos where you go, you want to pick up some speed and you just shave one arm.
Am I Fitspiration all of a sudden?
So we're talking about recording this on Saturday night. So we have no idea what's going to happen.
Jordan
on Sunday.
Spieth wins tomorrow.
You're going to listen to it on Monday. I wrote some things. I wrote a little piece about everybody if you want to hear it.
Yes.
And now we can just cut this in for who wins. You ready?
All right, hit it.
All right. So you couldn't script a more impactful champion, and not just golf, but sport, than Harold Varner winning on Sunday. What an unbelievable story. Great for golf, great for sport, great for society. Very pumped for Harold Varner. Hey, did you hear Jordan Spieth's back? Jordan Spieth is back. He's back. Justin Thomas wins a lot. That guy wins a lot.
He holed an 8-iron to win. It was wild. It was his fourth hole out from off the green of the day.
Justin Rose apparently can win with just about any golf club in his bag. Doesn't matter. He wins with new ones in there all the time. Did it earlier this year. Did it on Sunday. That's just crazy. Did you know Xander continues to be one of the most underrated athletes, not golfers, athletes 100%. In the world? Xander, this guy won again. He won at Colonial. Gary Woodland, apparently a big fan of mid-June golf. I think it's within 2 days well of his done. Win last year. And Daniel Berger does not fire over par rounds. He just shoots nope. under par. Pound for pound, one of Bryson's best performances of his career. I thought you'd like that one. Patrick Reed, with this victory, now in discussion for Player of the Year. A real discussion for him being Player of the Year on the PGA Tour. And out of all the Cal golfers in the field, I'd say Colin Morikawa is in my top three. Easily in my top three. Not number one, but he's either two or three. And those are the people that are in the hunt. Unfortunately, I wrote that this afternoon as I was watching it. And I think there was like two or three guys that played themselves into contention. I went, I'm not writing anymore.
Yeah, you don't need to write 57 them all. Notes. It's a great board. Obviously, I hate when people say, what a great leaderboard we get first. Like, yeah, we have like the top 50 players in the world here. Like, you're going to get a great leaderboard. It's cool for
it's
me,
like,
though.
It's like the Masters. Every it's time the Masters like leaderboard is good.
I don't get it. But I'm excited to see who wins tomorrow because Xander is one of my closest buddies out here. I played practice round with him on Tuesday. Jordan Spieth is probably my favorite golfer of all time. Colin Morikawa, like, we're good friends. Obviously went to Cal. JT, I love watching him win. So it's a cool board. Like, I like, we have all the guys you named, Rose, Woodland, Reed. Like, it's just a deep board. It's going to be fun. It's a good golf course. Super hard to separate yourself, but, values great play. I could see Xander, you know, kind of going out and being a machine. Like, I didn't watch any golf today, but the guy's been, Joe told me he's been putting it so well. So I feel like he's going to be very tough to beat, but you know, it's cool in every regard. Whatever happens, it's cool in every regard. And I think that's what you want.
Yeah. And that was the point of that, is that all of these players have a storyline that's following them around, and they're all fun in their own regard. I want to talk about your week in terms of what all went down with the PGA Tour and testing, but I got to start with not your golf. When we talk about some of the things that happened this week, I need to start with the story that was this week, and that is Bryson. And so first, what was up? I texted you, I think on Monday. You said you hadn't seen him yet. First time you saw him?
Man, walking from the chipping green to the putting green. He came at me all neck, a lot of neck, or maybe not a lot of neck. I don't know. I couldn't tell if it was a lot of neck or no neck, but I mean, holy hell, that man is big. I mean, he's been the talk of the town, and he should be. I pick it, Bryson. I like Bryson. Bryson is harmless. Like, we talked on the range. If I ever see him, I play practice rounds with him. He's fine. Like, he's Bryson, you know. He doesn't get enough credit for a couple things. One, this size and mass he's put on is wildly impressive, the discipline this man had. I don't care if people, you know, I saw the jokes, whatever, and it was funny. He said he's been drinking 5 to 6 protein shakes a day. I don't care if that's, like, that takes discipline just to do that. Like, I drink 1.5 muscle milks. I'm like, I'm pretty over this. Like,
it's he's not doing great. It all.
Oh, no, my God. And it, I mean, just imagine your stomach after that. And he's still playing great golf. They're not talking enough about how as good as wedge play is. We just keep hearing about how far he's stuffing everything. But truly, like, remarkable. I don't think he gets an ounce of enough credit. Everyone talks about his process and the things he's learned and all this stuff. He could do this with any golf club in the world. I wish people would understand how good he hits the ball or how well he hits the ball. I had a reporter, I'm not going to name him, come up to me last year, and I think he writes for some golf publication, and he basically said, can I ask you a few questions about Bryson? And I said, yeah, sure. And within two questions, I realized he was writing a hit piece trying to get me to say that Bryson is a fraud and that he's not that smart, which is seems to be a lot of media personalities, like, agenda, is to say he doesn't know that much about physics. Do I know if he knows everything about physics? I don't have any idea. I know nothing about physics. So I don't know why you're asking me. What I kept preaching to this reporter, and every question I kept spinning, was, you guys are not talking about the fact that Albert Einstein couldn't hit a golf ball and Bryson is flushing every shot he hits. I don't care what you figured out. I could put these clubs in my hand. I'm a great golfer. I could put these clubs in my hand and have no clue how to hit it like he hits it. And he could pick up my club and hit it just the way I hit it. Like, the guy is really phenomenal ball striker. The fact that you can put on this much mass and add this much speed and continue to control the golf ball is remarkable. And he doesn't get enough credit for being a great golfer. He just keeps being talked about as such a smart guy. And I think he's both, but I really do think that the golf is the reason. Like, I think he's just a very talented, hardworking golfer. But it was wild to see him. I hit balls next to him yesterday morning, Friday morning. Holy cow. I think somebody, like, lasered one of the caddies, I think Fleener, told me, he's like, have you seen Bryson at driver yet? I'm like, no. And he's like, dude, I just lasered this tree that's 320 and he was flying it. So I'm hitting balls next to him. I'm watching this thing, and it was wild.
Is he, like, just it launching it straight up into
it's
the air?
It's so high. He's a 5.5-degree driver. It's launching straight into the sky. He is swinging so hard. I think he clocked his ball speed. I think Joe Scovern told me he clocked his ball speed on Monday at like 195 cruising. And I'm just like, holy hell.
I mean, so two crazy things. Yeah, two things to your point. One is, you apparently attacked golf media, and you are, in fact, golf media. So you would somehow
just attack
you attacked yourself, which I don't know. I don't really like that at all. Second, I wrote in my notes a full paragraph that you basically just laid out. It was a paragraph saying that Bryson is probably the most interesting player in professional golf right now. And we love to laugh at him, but the guy, look at the results. I mean, he wins a lot. He does it with all sorts of weird stuff. He's not scared of talking about it. Is he full of it a lot of the time? Personally, yes, I do think he is. That's just what I think. But hey, you know what? A lot of athletes are full of it, and it's working for this guy. So I feel like we love to pile on him because it's fun to pile on him. But you said it. the discipline it's taken to get this much mass and to be this big and to still be able to play like he played before, but now he hits it 30 yards longer, is an unbelievable thing to bring to your game. And it's going to be successful for him, I think. We're seeing it this week, and it's a golf course you don't want to drive the ball. You know, you don't really want to pound the ball down the fairway, and he's doing it.
Yeah, his last three, I played with him last year here, and he missed a cut. I think he missed a cut year prior and got 44th the year before that. So he's coming to a golf course that doesn't, you would think, suit him for whatever reason. Who knows why? It should suit him. He hits it so straight, and you really do need to be in the fairway. But yeah, and now, you know, he adds 30 yards and he's playing the golf course better than he ever has. I would like to say, I wish I was smart enough to know if he was full of it at times.
Agreed.
Like, I have
Agreed.
No idea.
I'm not smart enough to know.
I'm going to take him for his word because it's clearly working. But yeah, exactly. Like he literally just hits it further now and he's the same good golfer. So I don't get why we can't just give him more props for, like, I don't know, hitting it really straight. People are like, man, he's put all this mass to hit it far. It's like, yeah, like he's, you know, anyone can do that if they wanted to. He's figured out a way to do it and keep hitting it straight. I mean, like, and further. It's not like I've seen a ton of very strong people swing a golf club like 80 miles an hour. Like, that's not how it all works. Like, you don't, he's figured it all out and he's also done it. I figured things out and I can't do it. Like, it's really impressive. And it's, I do think he is the most interesting player in all of golf right now. I would say almost more so than Tiger. Tiger is a little bit more because he plays less. So like, it's more like a, feels like such a big event when he does play. But Bryson, like, all of us wanted to see him. Like, he literally, he looks like he ate, somebody said he looks like he ate Matt Fitzpatrick. Like, he looks like a different human. I've known Bryson for a long time and, you know, he's a skinny dude. And like, he always had a big frame. I'll say that. He looked like somebody when, you know, now that I fast forward 2020 hindsight, but when he was 20, that he had the frame to like hold a lot of mass. And he proved it. I want to know where the cap is on the size, at what point there's a diminishing returns, but man, it's cool. It's cool to see him play well too, because he was playing great before this happened. You know, the break, he's playing great after as like a completely different human being. It's wild. But yeah, it's cool to see someone really draw a lot of attention, to the sport. You know, he makes an impact and he gets people buzzing about, you know, what's Bryson going to do here? Where is he going to hit driver? Is he going to iron? And then he hits a driver and you're like, holy cow, I've personally never seen anything quite like that. Cameron Champ hits it probably a similar ball speed. But Cameron really does have, I'm not saying that he has more or less control, but he hits a much flatter, lower golf ball.
Right.
Bryson lets the thing rip up in the sky. And I mean, it's remarkable. Like I've never seen it like that.
Yeah. What's so interesting, Max, is that, you know, when Tiger bulked up in the mid 2000s and people started to question the golfer working out, and this will be a very interesting test. If he can, quote unquote, change the way pros approach the gym and getting big and still being able to play, then you're going to see people do the same thing. I mean, that's how sports work. You know, if something works for one guy, a whole bunch of people follow. And so it'll be very interesting to see if a few other guys that need to gain distance throw 30 pounds on or 40 pounds on. I will say, Faldo said on Saturday in the broadcast that that the weight he put on was all muscle, which I just got to say, I don't think anybody can, I don't know if anybody knows how to talk about it yet, but we all love talking about it. So that's what's so great. And very pro Bryson. Everything he does makes me smile. Everything he does makes me laugh. And again, as you said, he's playing great golf while he's doing it. So I'd say that's a great recipe.
I want to point out, sorry to interrupt, but one thing, I will say this. I think that people saying that a bunch of other people are going to start doing this and this is how kids are going to get grown up into golf, I don't think it's true. I think that he has built a golf swing that has very few moving parts. It's a very one plane type golf swing, has really, really little rotation of the club face, which is small twitch muscles. And he's taken those out when most people get very, very big, like he did, and buff, I mean, like strong, you lose a lot of the touch in and the control of your quick twitch muscles because your big muscles have taken over so much. And most golf swings, I would say almost every golf swing out there has a bit of reroute somewhere, has a bit of rotation. He has, I would say, you know, close to the least as far as the total plane of his golf swing. I think that that is the magic of him, that he has both built and perfected and And that's his talent. Like, I think people might learn to do that before they learned how to get bigger. I would say that someone who got considerably bigger and stronger would lose a lot of the control of the bottom of the swing. And I think that's where you're going to see people, if they did try to do that, it's a remarkable part about Brooks. Brooks got a lot bigger and continues to do the things that he does. But Brooks has hit it far for most of his career. I don't think that he hits it significantly further because of how much bigger he's gotten and stronger since, maybe 6 years ago. I think it does. It's a therapy thing. I think it makes you feel better about yourself. I'm sure it does help here and there. I mean, at Beth Page last year, the fact that he could get out of that rough was remarkable. I would say that that's where the strength really came in. But I Brooks plays a hard cut. Like, I think it would be hard to be somebody who could develop all the, my point is, I think it takes a special person. I think Brooks is a special person. I think Bryson's a special person. I don't think everyone can put on a bunch of weight. I actually used to be like really big into the gym, and multiple things happened to me. My back hurt a little bit from carrying more weight. And of course, Bryson swings a lot more upright in his fall through. So does Brooks. I don't. My back tends to arch. I'm trying not to, but it just does. And it did that, and I lost a bit of flexibility here and there. I don't have super flexible wrists, so I couldn't make a completely full backswing. So I don't think that you're going to see it a ton. I think you're going to see it a little bit. I don't think that it will benefit a lot of people. You look at someone like Justin Thomas, I don't think it would be any good if he added a ton of mass. I think there's too much going on in most people's golf swing. Bryson has made it a very, very repeatable action, regardless of whose body it's on. Justin is wiry. His legs go all over the place. I don't think he can be a thick guy. He needs all those things to time up, which he's perfected by, too. So I'd be interested to see just how big people come into this sport as, because also you have to think, I hope this isn't the case. Bryson, it hasn't been a long enough trial. Like, I hope he doesn't get hurt. Like, I don't know how this works. None of us know how this works, but I would say, I mean, Tiger's had back issues. Like, it's a lot of weight to carry on your body and swing a lot of drivers. Now, I'm sure he's looked into it. He's incredibly flexible. So I don't think that it's going to happen, but this is a pretty small sample size of like longevity in a career. He's young kid. He's got a lot, he's got a lot of years left. I'm assuming he's got it figured out, but I would like to wait and see before we all decide, like, this is where everyone's going to go.
For sure. Listen, it's been three rounds. It's a great point. All I'm saying is that I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I feel like of all the sports, golf is a sport of lemmings. And when somebody changes something, fat grip, that there's a different way to pitch the ball. I feel like, there's phrases and ways guys try to hit the ball. They hit down on it. Now they hit up on it. Now everybody's hitting a cut. I do feel like people follow the leader in golf, and especially in professional golf, when things are working for somebody. And so I would just be interested if a guy, and you're right, a Justin Thomas isn't going to do it, even though it'd be hilarious to see Justin Thomas at 236 all muscle. But Justin's not going to do it. Rory's not going to do it. Dustin's not going to do it. They hit the ball plenty far, and they're already successful. I'm wondering of a pro that's 190th in the world that doesn't hit it very far, that would love to gain 30 yards, says, this offseason I'm going to try to put on 25 or 30 pounds of muscle and see how it goes, because it worked for Bryson. I'll be interested to see if that happens. But like you said, we are 3 days into the experiment. Let's give it 6 months before we try to change some body types around here. So will you walk us through early in the week? This is a return to golf. I mean, you got on an airplane, you traveled, you're in a hotel. What was the week like with COVID and all the testing, and what you had to go through, getting off the plane, getting to the golf course, being able to play in the tournament?
Yeah, it was interesting. Obviously, none of us had done anything like this. Had a few people on my flight from Arizona going here that were, playing in the tournament. So it was cool to have like a little group, because kind of none of us knew what we were getting ourselves into. I thought when we landed, I didn't know how we had courtesy cards this week. I didn't know how we were getting them. It was super efficient. I mean, they had somebody with gloves, keys in a baggie, like, felt very, very well planned. I thought we were doing the saliva test and we were doing the nasal test. I found out when we landed, I got extremely nervous because it looked horrendous. And I texted Taylor Gooch right when it was, because I knew he was there the day prior. And I said, "How bad is it, man? I need to know." And he goes, "It's not that bad." He really eased. I was freaking nervous, man. So I drove straight from there to the there's like a Dickies Arena here. It's one of the basketball arenas or whatever. And in the back at a parking lot, like it felt very like UFO, you know, Independence Day type stuff, some tents. And we all, you know, lined up. It was very quick. Probably
like Contagion, the movie.
Yeah. I didn't see that one, but it felt like one of those kinds of movies.
Gotcha.
Like it was eerie. It was hot. Like we had people in, you know, like, gowns or whatever, like doctors in the middle of a parking lot. But it took less than 10 minutes, the whole process, stood in line for 1 second, signed in, whatever, go into like a little tent. And the guy shows me the whatever looked like a Q-tip looking thing, the swab. And he says, hey, I'm going to go up here. I got to circle around for a second and then you'll be done. He said, he said, I had to do it. It won't be that bad. I'm like, I understand. And so like I've heard other stories, like I think, I can't remember who it was. It might've been Taylor. He said, I'm not looking at it. Like, don't show me what it is.
Right.
He goes, okay, put your head up and like lean back. So you lean back and they put it up there. And it's weird because when you watch the videos, it's frightening. First off.
Wait, did you watch the, like the testing videos of the nasal test?
I watched like other people have to do it and it looks so bad.
See, I'm with Taylor. I don't want to see it.
I didn't, you know? but I was past that. Like I couldn't get out of my head. So what's weird is when you watch it, it looks like, you know, it goes up there, guys. It if my brain was any bigger, it would have touched it. And so that's another fortunate thing for me. It's just the right size not to be touched by the brain, by the swab. So you don't feel it going up at all for like the first, I'm going to say 3 inches, 4 inches. I know there's some jokes in there, but you don't feel it at all. And then he gets to a point where it feels like, you know, the place in America by Utah and Colorado where the four states touch.
Yeah. Four squares.
It feels like that. Yeah, you got your corners. Neck. It's four corners. You feel like it's in the back of your nose, but also your neck and also your brain. Like it feels like you're in three places at once. And all of a sudden when it touches, it's like you're playing operator and it's buzzing. Like everything was all good until you touch the sides. And he does like a three little circle thing. And the moment it goes up there, my right eye was watering so hard immediately. And it was just, it didn't hurt. It was nothing like I thought it was going to be, but it was incredibly uncomfortable, like just incredibly uncomfortable. But it's over in 3 seconds. I thought my guy took a victory lap at the end, but he said that's normal. So I'm done and I'm like very happy for it to be done. I mean, I'm driving like with one eye, like half shut because it was just wouldn't stop crying basically. But easy. If I had to do that again, I thought I had to do that again today. I could have easily done it. It was better.
Same, would you have done same nostril or would you change it up?
I don't ask. Just shove it up there and get it over it. I don't want to think about it. But yeah, it wasn't like I could have done it again. Would I rather do the saliva test 100%? But it was one of those things. The second time would have actually been easier than the first time. The first time had a ton of hype, like
for sure.
Too much hype. So we do that. I didn't get the results until maybe, which was remarkable, maybe 3 or 4 hours later, like super fast. Once you get those results, you can then the next morning, Tuesday, I went to the golf course. You have to go, even driving in, you get your temperature taken before you go in. Then you walk into like where registration normally is. It's obviously much different. Like Scribbs is one of the guys who you know, usually checks us in and does so much stuff for us. And he's got a mask on and you know, there's tables very like all apart. Like it felt very odd. And you know, I had to show them that I passed on this app that they have. Once I got the pass, I got a new credential that said you are allowed in all areas. Basically, I can go in the locker room. Because before, even if I wanted to go to the course, I could have without a pass test until the tournament started, but I couldn't go in certain areas. I couldn't do certain things. So then you get that, then you're good. You know, the caddy, same thing. Joe had like an orange wristband. They all wore the orange wristbands. We had one put on our lanyard. But yeah, then honestly, it felt very normal after that. A ton of the stay 6 feet apart and a lot of the messages we're getting, I understand are for our safety, but it also very much so is for perception and optics.
Right.
We did, you know, Joe's wiping down the pin, wiping down all of the rakes and the bunkers, which I hit into way too many of. So we got good at it. Shout out Zen Wipes, by the way. Scott Pinkney's Wipes Company sponsored the whole
thing.
Is that really?
Cool.
Yeah.
That's
so that
nice.
Was cool. But yeah, so everyone was doing all the right things. But we also all tested negative to this thing.
Right.
So I never felt uncomfortable being out there. I knew that everyone there had tested negative. The manufacturing companies, our bags of like golf balls and gloves and hats, were all in a in an area that they couldn't bring to us. Like they were already sanitized. We would grab them. They couldn't come on the range. There were only a certain amount of people allowed on the range, or certain types of people allowed on the range, because the manufacturers didn't get tested. So they would stay where they were. If you needed something, it would go through this whole pipeline of stuff. Every morning we would get, like I said, the temperature test. Which I don't know what would have happened if I had a mild, you know, fever. What would happen? Because
maybe a retest. I mean, maybe they retest possibly, you for it. I don't
but
know.
It would have been weird if it was morning of a tournament, because I don't have right. 4 hours. But who knows? But we didn't have that issue. And then then today, Saturday, everybody retested. If you're getting on the charter flight to Hilton Head, you have to retest. But this one was the saliva test. So you just like awkwardly spit in a tube. It takes, I don't know, a forever to create that much spit. And then if you don't, so if you fly either private by yourself, you fly commercial, or you're coming from another tournament, when you land, you have to do the nasal test again. So small perk, you don't have to get some stuffed up your nose if you did this test already. So I took mine today. I'm going to get the results tomorrow night. Felt very safe, felt very normal. Even the lack of fans felt oddly normal.
I was going to ask you about that, the no fans
I don't play
thing.
In front of tons of people.
But like the range, like, you typically see around. Them.
Yeah, yeah. And like I was playing behind Phil Mickelson, Gary Woodland, Kevin Na, like a huge group. And no one being there was odd, because Gary played awesome and I didn't hear a cheer. So you're only seeing it on the board. It's just very, very weird. I hit two shots the first day to 3 inches, like combined 6 inches total. And I couldn't have told you where the ball was. Like you have no idea. It looked close. You get closer, you have the excitement like you normally do with your boys, like back home, where like, oh, there's the ball, like it's kicking. So that stuff was odd, but I didn't think it was like wildly different. There was a few houses that were I'm going to interject my feel good Friday. Golf is so back, like, and sports are back, and it felt good to watch people enjoy having sports. There's a fence behind 5T. Every day there were at least 5 people just standing there watching people tee off. I'm sure there were more when like a more popular player came through. On 15, the house across the street on the right set up their own bleachers and had a party. And I'm sure they weren't social distancing exactly great, but they were having a party, yelling, hooting, hollering. Kids were, you know, cheering. Shout out to the kid who yelled like for me to make the putt, like by name, like I was cool.
Did you make 16, it?
No, I missed it, but shout out to him for the positive encouragement. I needed it,
you know what? He's, we should send him something. He's giving him a card.
Stop sending. You're sending too many things. And then we get to 16, and there's a guy, they're having another party, huge bleachers, guy with the megaphone announcing everybody, you know, who's coming up to the tee. By the time I got there, I think he was a little liquored up, because they were going on for a little while. But he also, by the way, bad omen on Friday, twice got called the wrong last name. On the first tee announcement, I got called Max Holm, which is close, not it.
It's really close.
And then on that tee on 16, the guy said Homa. Like I could hear him in the mic thing.
See, sponsorship, maybe. He works for the club company.
It was a
2021.
Bad omen. But yeah, so we still had some fans. It was actually even more distracting. I don't know how so many people had a cart. There was constantly a cart driving around. Tons of them didn't get that. There were ropes up, didn't get the ropes, but I thought it was great. They had spotters in every hole. We had a walking score, no standard bearers. The scores all stayed pretty far away. Like they were very, you know, it was safe. Awkward when you're done the round, fist bump or air high five, whatever it was. I don't know what everybody did. We like, I think we fist bumped the last hole or whatever. I don't even know if we were supposed to do that. It felt so normal. The first tee was the only time it felt really weird on the very first day. I felt like I rushed my first tee shot, although I hit it good. But Joe even said it felt like, or it looked like I went faster. And I think it was just because usually wait for a little lull. You go, I felt like I was in a practice round. I walked behind it. I took like a quarter of a practice swing, walked in and hit it. And next thing I know, I was like, geez, I went through that fast. Whereas the tournament, you know, you're whatever. You're like, it felt just like a round of golf. It felt like I was playing at home.
Yeah, you're getting announced Max Holm, and then, you know, you go after it.
First day, they nailed it.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
Wait, what's the worst you've ever been announced as? What's the biggest hack job? Is there one that stands out?
Yeah, I mean, there's one that most people call me when they're making fun of me, which is not the nicest term, but I literally got called that, and then he very quickly went,
by a first tee announcer?
Oh yeah, in college. I remember. I can tell you the guy's name. I remember him.
I'm not going to.
And it was at a tournament I won't name either. But yeah, it was a big amateur golf tournament, and he went with it, and then caught himself and then went back. And I was, and I looked at him and I said, I know this guy. I was like, really? Like, you didn't even need to read the sheet. You know who I am. Like, we were like friendly. But the, that was the worst, only because it was very rattling. Like, I was like, how did you get that? It was, it wasn't the name that got me. It was like, we're, it would be like you saying, calling me Matt. Like, you should know my name. Like, we're friends.
I went to your wedding. You did, you also had a, you had a intro online.
Yeah, that was
from
so
our
cool.
good friend Aaron Rodgers. I do have a, I got a bone to pick with Aaron though. I called you an occasional podcaster. Now, Max, if he knows you at all, if he calls you a friend, there was nary a podcast you said no to during quarantine. There is, you are not an occasional podcaster. You are a podcaster.
I think it was being nice, you know. I turned out a couple, but I would say less than a dozen. but yeah, that was really cool. It gets me in a commercial amongst players who are all top 10 in the world. And there, it's like one of these things is not like the other.
It was great. I didn't realize that it happened. His beard looked great. The guy's just. Can Aaron grow facial hair better than anybody? Is he the best?
This is a topic of debate. What's thicker, Aaron Rodgers' beard or Bryson? Because they're both thick with a multiple C's.
Yeah, respond on Twitter at MaxHoma23 at Shane Bacon. Let us know. Which do you find thicker? Did you accidentally wave at anybody when you made a putt or hit a good shot?
No, I didn't. I did see Phil made a putt on one, and I'm sure someone cheered, but he had tipped to him, and it was very funny. Just because we pointed it out.
Yes, CBS put together a package of this. It was actually brilliant from their production team. They put together a package. They showed it on Friday and Saturday of players, you know, waving, hat tipping, not realizing what they were doing. The benefit from a viewer, somebody at home watching, you know, I mean, we can hear everything. Jordan Spieth, you don't, as a broadcaster, he's going to put me out of a job if we don't have fans, because he, I mean, you just can't say anything. You've got to lay out. Did they, I was going to ask you, Ricky, you know, was mic'd up and people were praising him. Did you get asked? Did other people get asked? Do you know of people that got approached about being mic'd up, but you personally, did anybody come up to you and say, hey, do you mind if we mic you up?
Yeah, I was asked last week if I'd be down to be mic'd. I responded, I'm down, but you need the bleep button because I swear quite often on the golf course. They said, came back, he said, we'll have the bleep button. You could do it. I said, okay, cool. Like, I'd be down if you guys offered. And then I get my pairing this week was with Captain Steve Stricker, who's going to be captain of the Ryder Cup team. And they asked me, like, are you all good? And I said, actually, I'm not going to do it this week. I'd be down a different week, but I wanted to ask them about the Ryder Cup. I didn't want to feel like we couldn't have like an intimate conversation. Not that we really did have anything. There's nothing breaking news like going on with what we're talking about, but I wanted to feel comfortable. I wanted to feel like I could talk about what I wanted to talk about with him at times or ask him questions here and there. I didn't want to feel like there was anything odd going on, especially because some of the stuff he's talking about with the Ryder Cup is news, like just about if it's going to be played, what he's hearing. I don't want to be breaking down some news or whatever. So I would do it in the future, I think. I texted Tron and DJ and all the no laying up guys, cause they've been really harping on a ton of players got asked and everybody turned it down except Ricky. Personally, we came to an agreement. I don't like bashing players for not seeing the benefits of being mic'd up. I would say that 95% of the time I've seen someone mic'd up, there has been more backlash of how boring that human being is than there is positive. So also, it is the broadcast job to make the broadcast more interesting, not the player's job. The players play. When you hear a coach in basketball be mic'd up, you hear nothing because they can't actually tell you. They're not allowed to tell you the strategy. They tell you, you hear the same thing every time. Come on, guys, we need more energy. We got one stop on D. But what they're really saying is, they're giving the X's and O's, but they can't say those because that's the intimate information and detail. So what JT said was that he goes, he and Jimmy talk about things that are personal to them, and they don't want people getting a leg up. Now, what DJ Tron and I came to an agreement on, and I'm totally with this, when you hear the term mic'd up, I took it as, and I think most do, is you're going to be able to hear everything I say the whole day. And I don't really want that. We had one, and being honest, we had one conversation in 2 days that was really interesting. And it was literally about video games. It had nothing to do with anything, but people I think would have laughed. Like, it would have been funny. But for the rest, I keep to myself. Now, what DJ and Tron said that was a better way to say it is, if it was kind of named in a better way of, you're going to hear what Joe and I go through each shot, I think that would be great. I don't want people hearing my conversations. I will share what I want to share. Even when you see NFL players mic'd up, that thing is edited down. You hear the stuff that you want to hear. Joe said a great point. The stuff that is going to be interesting for people to hear, minus the golf shots, it should not be on.
It's never going to make the air.
It's either me talking shit to Joe about Joe that's funny, or him talking shit to me, or us talking shit about somebody else. Like it becomes more like, there are things in life that should be private, and it's not saying that I'm saying something that I wouldn't want the other person to hear. It's just more that even if I do, I want just them to hear. Like, I'm not going to say, I just don't want everything coming out of my mouth to be picked apart, because I know what I mean, and it's very easy to clip things and make them seem not what they are. But we make fun of each other. I'll whisper something, like Andrew Landry would hit a shot and I'd whisper something, be like, man, I think he missed that. Like, I don't want people to think like, That's a negative thing. We all miss shots, but there is just stuff. So that's if it was just when I'm hitting, I'm down for it. I think I'm going to do it. But yeah, a lot of people turn down because I think it feels like a little bit of a violation of your privacy in a small, weird way, because I know it's not, but I'm not used to playing golf with a freaking mic on my back.
Right. I mean,
my job to change how I play.
Yeah. You're going to feel that. I mean, it is different, but I think your point is spot on. And listen, the tour is not going to let stuff come out that is going to make you look bad or going to make another player look bad. I mean, the mic'd up idea is to hear certain stuff that is picked to listen to. And so that's what it hopefully will be. But I'm with you on this 100%. I don't understand why we have mics on coaches and players to begin with. And I love that all golf fans are yelling for this, and they all watch these other sports, and every time those things come on, you're like rolling your eyes or going
to
get it.
They say it's so boring, and it I swear, I am a fairly interesting conversationalist out here. Like, and I think most people really are when you get to have a real conversation. But think about when you play golf, like the mundane BS that goes through, you're going to be over it. Like in my 2 days, we didn't have these deep combos. We talked a little bit. Like, I asked Steve like who his football team was, and he surprised me because it was the Bears and not the Packers. Like, this stuff is boring to you. The interesting stuff,
would make the broadcast.
But, yes, you know? And that's what's not, like, that's where I disagree. Now I want to do it because I'm on the side of like growing interest in the sport. My opinion is I don't think that is a long-term way to improve the sport's like entertainment value. I think that here and there, I can, and there has been some great, great sound bites over the years. Jordan Spieth at Augusta in saying, what would Arnie do? And then they go for it. That's phenomenal. There's tons. There's probably one this week when Ricky's talking about the drop and there was a crazy thing on 15. Like, that was interesting. But in general, I think it will start to blend together like everything does. And I just don't think the players feel like the upside of really entertaining everyone is equal to the downside of then everyone being like, that guy's boring or that guy.
You say something and they don't cut it, or it makes the air. And then you come off like an ass. I'm with you 100%. I would love to. I mean, what needs to happen to the no lineup guy's point is it needs to be framed as, and I think PGA Tour Live does this because I believe I used to read into these when I used to do live, was I think they would have a sponsor, a brand or whatever involved, and it would be basically presented as, let's get an in-depth look at Joe and Max presented by whatever, and it's caddy conversations, and it's basically something that already happened, a shot that happened, and you guys going through that shot as that player awesome. And caddy. And that's the stuff that's going to make it great. But just listening in to your point, it doesn't benefit the player, and I'm not necessarily sure it benefits the fans. So at least you and I are on the same page there. I wrote down some stuff. I said things that made me happy this week and things that didn't. Okay. Are you good with this?
I have one that didn't.
Okay. So things that made me happy. One, I know you missed the cut, dude. And I know you want
to talk about
cut.
The 18th hole, because I want to explain to people.
Okay. Things that made me happy was I jump online on Thursday. You start on the back nine, you start on 10, and I see birdie 11, and I jump on Twitter, and somebody said, did you know 11 is the Aeon Risk Reward Challenge Hole? You played the Aeon Risk Reward Challenge Hole, one under for the week, I mean, you're fifth in the Aeon Risk Reward Challenge. It's huge. You've got to be going up, right? If you play at 100,
it's a hard. It's not an easy par five. It's 640 yards.
It's 640 is the risk reward. Who's getting there in two?
Yeah, you got to. I mean, I know one guy probably did. He probably had a five iron in. But yeah, that was clutch. I didn't even. I was rusty. I didn't even know what the Aeon hole was, which may be my strategy going forward. I have one good thing. I got to see the prima donna of the PGA Tour back. We're all staying basically at the same hotel. They're understaffed, obviously, COVID. Like, you can't have full staff.
Right.
Okay, early tea time on Thursday, and I come downstairs, and everything's valet. And again, super safe. Like, everyone, masks, gloves, like, the whole nine. And I go out, and there's tons of players sitting in the lot, or in the front, and somebody comes up to me, and they're bitching and moaning about how it's going to be a 30-minute wait. And they're, like, yelling at me, like, I'm supposed to now get mad. And I'm like, okay, like, you know, I'm a fairly calm guy. I don't really complain about a lot of things. I'm like, okay, like, first off, you knew that this could be an option. We have like 100 players staying here with caddies. Second, you could have just come down earlier. You're allowed to do that. And why are you getting mad at the five employees working for 100 of you? Like, it's not their fault. Like, they were not, they can't call their friend Brian and be like, Brian, you actually need to work today. Like, that's not their job. So people getting very mad. Joe is pointing out probably tipping less than they should, even though they'd be tipping more. People being prima donnas, thinking that this is the end of the world. When we all got there, I ended up actually being earlier than I expected after breakfast. Like, I actually had like an extra 5 minutes to warm up. Like, it's okay. Like, but I missed all the players freaking out.
Complaining about
maybe
nothing.
The smallest thing, and also blaming it not on themselves, on other people. You knew who was staying here. We all stay here. Everybody's going to be asking for the card about the same time.
Right. Max, I have an idea. I have an idea to solve all of what we just talked about. Let's mic the valet guys. Let's mic the valet guys and have the players.
Mother effing the world out of the PGA Tour.
Yelling at X, Y, and Z player that's screaming at them.
Goodness.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
Another thing that made me happy, just the way, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen on Sunday. We already talked about recording this on Saturday, but I have no clue the week and the couple of weeks that have been for Harold Varner, and for him to go out and play the way he played, his bounce back after that triple on Friday. I mean, all the thumbs up. It was really impressive to watch. I don't know a single person that's not rooting for the guy to go out there on Sunday and shoot 63 and win this thing. So that was, it just made me happy to see his name on the leaderboard, to see him playing so well. You know, I mean, this is it's got to be, no matter what he says, it's got to be a pretty big week. And I was so pumped to see the way he's played.
Yeah, Harold's one of the best dudes on this whole planet, not just golfer. He's a very, very good friend, a very genuine person. I do hope, you know, if he does win and you know, I know everyone on the planet basically is rooting for him. I know he's got a lot on his back. I hope we celebrate him, the golfer, right? Harold, because he deserves a win, and he shouldn't be. I just hope that he is appreciated for his golf, and I think it's been hard enough. You know, the all the questions he's gotten. I hope that when, you know, he continues to play great, that we can just like celebrate
praise him. Yeah.
Him.
Yeah. Celebrate his play.
For that.
Hey, go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to ask you, this week, you know, for somebody like Harold or JT or Bryson, anybody in the hunt going into Sunday, did this week feel for you a lot bigger in terms of an event? I mean, did it feel on the range getting prepared? Did it feel like a regular week, or did it feel bigger?
No, it felt normal. What's interesting is, unless it's a major where things are literally built up, it never feels that built up. I don't care how good the crowd is, or the field is. When Tiger's there, it always feels a little bigger for whatever reason. But in general, like, you know, you could say the field is amazing, but you're so used to every field being amazing. It's like you're adding, like, oh, there's, it's not like, you know, all the good golfers there. It's the people you see on TV all the time, you know, in the lead. So it doesn't feel crazy different. I don't know how to explain it. Like, I'm starting to realize as I'm getting older and more experienced in these tournaments, like, it feels bigger when they make it feel bigger.
Gotcha.
Or if Tiger's there. Like, those are the only two things that really make it feel like an elevated tournament. Like, I remember the PGA last year. I got there and I probably never played in a field that good before, minus like maybe the US Open, but I would say the PGA is a better overall field. But what's weird is I wasn't looking around thinking, oh, there's Phil and there's Tiger and there's Brooks and there's Xander and there's DJ. Like, you don't look at it like that, but you look at like, holy cow, there's a lot of stands and there's a ton of people. It's weird because you should, like, you know, going down the range, you're hitting balls next to all the best golfers in the world. But I think you just get used to it in an odd way. And maybe if it was one of my first PGA Tour events, it would have felt a little bit bigger, but I'm getting comfortable. All the guys are so normal and cool. And I freaking practice with John Rahm at home. I mean, the guy is the second best golfer in the world right now, I think. So it's like, you know, you just, it starts to become the actual players become so much less of the excitement value, just because you get so almost like overexposed to it. You're just used to seeing these guys everywhere you go.
Well, yeah, you know, something that I found really, really interesting, you know, we did the Regrip series during quarantine where we watched some old USGA events. We had Justin Rose come on when we did the US Open at Marion. And something he said on that Regrip, you can watch it on YouTube. It's youtube.com/regripped, by the way, that's a plug. One thing he said that I found very interesting, and you agreed, was he said, you know, I really don't get nervous a lot until Sunday and I'm in contention and it's the final, you know, 11, 12, 13 holes. He said everything else, it kind of almost feels like business as usual for him because it is his business.
Yeah, it goes back to, I think I mentioned on here early in an early episode. When I watch golf, And even when I watch somebody like tap in or make a 3-footer to win, like Ricky Fowler at Wells Fargo is a perfect example. When he won the Wells Fargo and he has to make like a 3-footer straight up the hill, it has almost no break. He's one of the best putters in the world. Like, very easy putt. But when I'm watching him, I always think to myself, how the hell can you do that? Like, I'm right. Like, it feels like you would be so nervous and so shaky, but it's something all of us have done so many times that when you actually are doing it, it doesn't feel that way. It feels more business as usual. When you get nervous, it's even like a progression of nerves. The only time I would say I get a spike in nerves is on the first tee of a big round, because I feel a little nervous in the morning and uptight, but as I'm warming up, it all goes away for the most part. But as I get to the tee, it's like it all like spikes. Whereas in a general round, it slowly progresses. You have certain shots that might feel a little bit more nervy, but like it's, you know, as you get closer and closer to your goal, it starts to build, even, you know, and honestly, this week without the people, like, I didn't feel that nervous on 18, oddly enough. Like, I felt fairly normal for having to par one of the harder holes on the course. You know, I was nervous on my second putt, but even still, like, nothing. I even think it might have been a distraction because I thought I'd feel more, and felt like I was thinking about feeling like not that nervous or whatever, and realizing that it doesn't feel like a real PGA Tour event because there's nobody. It was nobody here. I don't know how to explain it though, because I didn't think it was that odd. Like, I mean, there were people. It just wasn't.
Gotcha.
I don't know how to explain it, but yeah, I think that's just the point, watching, is that you're generally just doing the same thing over and over and over again, like everybody does in everything. And in this case, you know, it's a little bit more of an entertainment product, but man, like it does. You just get going and, you know, you just keep making swings and you do a great job of focusing and being, you know, saying, okay, well, this tee shot has to be this. And by the time you get over the ball, you're like, man, I've done this a trillion times. Like, the nerves are there, but like they're not at the same time.
So two other things that made me happy, and then we'll get to things that made us not happy. And we already gone over these, so these are just another recap. I mean, every time they showed Bryson, I smiled.
Yeah,
I was so happy to see
him. His back is enormous, by the way. I just want to point that out to everybody.
But I mean, I just was happy. I was happy to watch him play. It put me in a good mood. Also, what put me in a good mood was, I mean, this Jordan Spieth thing, I don't know what he's going to do on Sunday, but I just, golf's better when Spieth's 100%. Playing well. It's way 100%. Better when Spieth's playing well, because he's so much fun to watch play and he's so much fun to listen to talk about his round. I'm going to let you lead with things that made you not so happy. Go ahead.
Things that made me not so happy. Missing the cut, probably top of my list, not quite sure. You know, I had a bite of a brisket sandwich last night. It wasn't like, it was a little dry, so that made me a little happy.
This is
a little, made me a little more happy. I'll walk you guys through it. This is not me having, I hope people understand, this isn't an excuse. I've gotten to talk a lot about the great rounds so far this season, and I want to take you through a not-so-good moment. Played, like I said, kind of scratchy the first day, missed quite a few fairways, but still felt good about my swing. A lot of balls were curving the wrong direction, but we're all out of the middle of the face, which is usually a good sign for golf. didn't, you know, a couple of up and downs here and there, whatever. But like make birdie on nine or my last hole nine, 18th hole of the day, feeling good, whatever.
Shoot even par.
You shoot even par. Not good, not bad, whatever. Indifferent. Come out the next day and felt really good. Another great warm-up session. Hit a not great drive on one, but like I hit it solid and goes in the bunker. Didn't have a tough shot. Kind of weird lay or weird lie, I guess, looking back on it. And pull hook a 3-iron out of the fairway bunker into a spot that's not dead to make par. It's not really reasonable to make birdie, but a little hard pan, whatever. I have to play a shot long, whatever. Long story short, make bogey. Horrible start because one I think was the easiest hole in the course. Now I lipped out a putt for par on that hole. I burnt the edge on two. I burnt the edge off four. Six, I burnt the edge. So like it just like it's seven and burnt the edge. So like I just felt like I couldn't get anything going. Then I birdie eight, great par on nine, birdie 10, saved a par on 11, which was huge. And then now I'm going. Like and now I can't miss. I'm starting to realize that like I'm hitting a ton of fairways. I'm hitting it quite far and I'm just sending it and it feels good. Every ball for the most part is on my line minus one or two shots. I finally birdie 14 after like missing a few putts. I'm feeling great. 15, I hit it down the middle, leave myself a great look, miss. 16, another great look, miss. 17, another decent look, miss. And I get to 18 and again, like I have all the confidence in the world. The tee shot I haven't had great success with this week. I had missed it the practice round and the day before, but only by a yard. Got up there. I literally told myself in my head, I was like, you, and I'm trying also, by the way, not to think about the cut. I'm trying to think about if I make this putt, I'm one closer to lead. If I make this putt, right, I'm one closer to lead. So I'm doing a good job of that. But when you get to 18 and you're on the cut line and it's a harder hole, you're thinking, you know, got to make a par, nice. Obviously. It's hard not to think about that. And I told myself in my head, you said, you hit this fairway and it's fine because I haven't missed an iron shot like felt like all day, especially with the wedge. I took out through it and I absolutely laced it. Like couldn't bend more exact how I wanted to get to hit it. Get out there, middle of the fairway, hanging lie. It's always like a little right ball above your feet. And pins right side. There's water left, but it's really not in play for the most part. And I, you know, the greens are spinning a lot. They're very, very soft. So we get up there and of course ball's in an old divot and it's not bad, but it's not good. And this is the hardest part about player caddy relationship. There is the caddy can't feel the lie. And Joe is the best at feel. He literally right. is the best I've ever seen caddy at feel, but we always talk about this and he brings it up to me. He can't feel a lie. I can see it and put my club behind it and feel these things out. And he can't. So well, we're over the shot. We had 145 and the ball is going forever because it's hot. And I'm hitting my pitching wedge about 140 to 145. At times when we got the wind, like we had a little off the right, like I could draw it to turn it like 150. Like it's far. Now, he said, as long as that lie you don't think is going to really like bug the ball, I think it's pitching wedge. And I kept, this is my one regret for the week for as far as decision-making goes. I kept in my head wanting to hit nine and I kept kind of picking his brain to see if he thought it was nine. He kept saying it was wedge. And this is not an indictment on Joe. He is right. To the number, it's right. I am wrong because I did not speak up and say, I think this ball is going to spin out of this lie and it's not going to get the number it needs to get because I need to get down and get it. And it's actually going to cut out of this lie. And it's going to fight the wind and not ride the wind. And right as I hit it, it comes out kind of exactly how I thought. I could have hit it a little, maybe more like trapped and dug in there, but I'm trying not to make a dumb mistake. I'm just right. trying to keep hitting and it comes out a little low on the face. It spins. It's right at the flag. I mean, it's not a bad swing and it lands at the top of the crest and runs and spins back. And right as I knew I was going to have a freaking, now I got to grind. And I was frustrated again in no way in Joe and just me because I didn't speak up. I kind of limped into speaking up. I kept trying to get him to be like, all right, just hit the nine. Instead of being like, Joe, I feel this shot. This has to be squeezed and cut up against the wind. And it's, you know, it's going to spin more. It's just not going to get the total number. And I didn't do that. And it was so freaking dumb when you look back on it.
Do you think that's a little bit of, do you think there's any level of that just being that you haven't been playing a lot of tournament golf and, no. and you're not in the routine? Or is that just you're bad at one time off?
I'm not good at speaking up. Yeah, I'm not good at speaking up because I also have all the faith in the world in Joe. And I think he is right. If I would have gone down after and really got it, I think it does get there. I just don't think that was the right shot if I'm playing all things back. Now, 2020 hindsight, who knows? I guess I'm wrong, but I'm not wrong. Like I'm also guessing a lie. It also sucks a lot that I hit a tee shot like that and not the perfect lie. Like that's another part of golf that whatever. Right. That's a whole story for another day. So the ball spins back or whatever. And again, my lag putting been great. I've gone over this, but I didn't have a great feel for the speed, even though it looked like I did. I just, nothing ever felt good. And then I hit a horrendous second putt, but I hadn't been putting that great and I had missed quite a few putts. And it sucks to miss a cut. I choked the cutaway. I also, you could look back on a million other things. Shouldn't have bogeyed one. I should have made a lot more putts for birdie. And then on the Thursday, I made two really careless bogeys. But yeah, that made me sad. It's a learning experience. I think this will be the first time where I finally realized, like, at times I need to say, Joe, like, trust me on this. I'm going to cut this nine, even though it feels like a shot. Joe always says that feels like a lot of a shot. Let's just hit the one that's just a normal swing. That case, because the lie wasn't perfect, it's just a very hard feel situation. And I need to speak up because I obviously am playing, like, and I play more golf by myself than I do with Joe. So like, I need to be like, hey man, like the way I have to hit the shot, I got to hit the nine because it can land long and spin, whatever. But, you know, in general, like we're just going through numbers and pitching wedge goes about 145 here and we have 145. So we're not going to push the back edge. But in that case, like, I wish I would have gone back and done that. The putts stunk, but the putts aren't where it was a choke. I guess it was a little bit because it was like such a poor first putt. But it was just, again, part of the game that just never felt comfortable with the speed. They were really, really slow. They're just not like, I don't know if they watered them or whatever, but they were playing soft and slow and a little inconsistent. And everyone had to deal with it. But mine happened to be, you know, the issue was on the last hole. So, but it's a good learning experience. I like walking away at times when I miss cuts feeling like this, cause it's makes me chomp at the bit a little bit more. I do need to do a better job of what Brooks mentioned like a couple years ago about not thinking about the cut, thinking about winning the golf tournament. Cause I felt like I got up Friday and was very much more focused on shooting 200 to make the cut than I was shooting six. And I hit the ball plenty good enough to shoot six and gotcha. I didn't allow myself to do so. I had a few shots, you know, that were at the pin and didn't go as close as I would have liked. But I also hit, you know, some good wedge shots really close. So it's one of those weeks, but it was a bummer not to keep playing, not the end of the world. It sucked that it came at that time and I need to grow up in certain areas. But I mean, good learning experience, sucky, choky moment. It happens, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, imagine for a minute. Close your eyes and think about this. Imagine if you hadn't played the Aeon hole one under. I mean, just think about how much worse the week would have been. We're going to take a quick break and be right back. Something in my things that didn't make me real happy, but I wrote in parentheses, they kind of did. The Phil Mickelson shades. I wanted to get your thoughts. You probably saw them up close. So were they? Did you like them? Did you love them? Because I've got my thoughts.
I tweeted about him when he played that match or something, and I said that these sunglasses are either $3,000 or like $8 from CVS, and there's no in between. Oh, and I am assuming they're $3,000 because Phil is filthy stinking rich. But I don't love them. I just don't. Joe loves them. Joe says they look really cool. I don't think they look that cool. I think they're shiny. We all like shiny.
They are so.
I feel like he would look
shiny.
Better in like black Ray-Bans. I don't like the silver. It feels like. It looks very metal. Like it's not, I don't know. I feel like he looked really cool in Ray-Bans.
So Cindy and I just watched Back to the Future on Friday night, and Doc in the first one wears these glasses and they look just like Phil's glasses. This is what I wrote about Phil's shades. I said, he looked like a guy in Vegas that had a super insane night on the blackjack table, woke up with a massive hangover and on his way down to his bottle service at Wet Republic, realized he forgot his sunglasses in his room, and instead of going back up to the room, he went into a store and spent $700 on Dior shades. That's what he looked like with the wearings. And I couldn't look past it. It was distracting to look at those sunglasses. And I can only imagine it had been distracting to play in them.
Yeah, I've never been somebody who could play in sunglasses.
Me neither. So
I just don't vibe them in general. I don't know. It's Phil.
It's
like
Phil.
He can kind of do whatever he wants. Tiger does the same stuff. He wore, you know, those humongous sunglasses for a while. I don't mind the Carlos shirts, but like you could do whatever you want. I'm like, again, I pick fun of people, but like, I mean, I don't actually care. Like,
I don't
I think I'm not going to like, I'm not his fashionista. Like, I don't know. If I had to pick something, would I pick something different? Sure. But like, if those make him happy, that's great. I'm more concerned about keeping the glove on while he drinks his coffee. That creeps me out.
Hey, one other thing I didn't love is every time they show Dustin putting, I kept thinking that it was his usual putter somebody had banged against the concrete. It looked super funky. It just didn't look like Dustin putting, even though I think he actually putted decent with it. I don't like change, Max. This throws me off. It was,
but you love Bryson.
But it was good change. It was thick change, man.
Man, you're chain shaming.
We're running a little long, but I do want to get to some flights. Did you have a best thing you heard this week?
I just thought it was the general like cheers from people across the street at a golf room. I thought that was really cool. I know that was my feel good Friday, but like that was just cool to hear. Cause I mean, I don't think it was just the golf. I'm sure it was a big part of it, but people crave sports. Sports were back. It was good to see people, you know, yelling and having some fun.
Worst thing you heard this week, and you can say my 59 watch. I mean, it started early, but it was, you know, it's the first time in my life I'll admit that it was a little premature.
I don't know. The worst thing I heard this week, I guess I already spoiled it, but getting my name wrong twice in one day kind of stinks. Worst thing I heard this week also was, I guess technically, hey, it's not a saliva test, it's a nasal test. That one sucked. So those two are like my fondest and favorite moments of the week. But also when I got to the hotel and it said no room service, although we ended up having it if you were part of the tour, but that one scared me because I was like, well, I have to be inside all the time. I'm like, what? How am I going to eat?
Where's no room service at all? This is such a bummer.
Yeah, it was a bio, but they fixed it. So
worst thing I heard this week. I'm putting this on myself. This isn't the 59 watch. My boss, who is a great guy, his name's Mark Loomis. He listens to the podcast. He called me the other day. He said, I'm going out to Wingfoot. I'm playing later this week with these two guys that I've played with. That one of them has won the club championship at Wingfoot. One of them is one of the best players of the club. And the third guy is a guy named Max Adler, who works at Golf Digest, who is like a stick. I mean, he's like Laffy Taffy Sticky. He's unbelievable. Good player, plays in a lot of mid-am stuff. And I was thinking like, man, this is a pretty intimidating group. And I nonchalantly, without thinking, I said, you know, so what are you these days, Loomy? Are you like a seven? And he calls me the next day and he's like, hey, man, you really pissed me off yesterday. So what did I do? And he goes, you said I was a seven. And I was like, oh, you know, I mean, I wasn't even really thinking. I mean, I know you're probably better than a seven. You're probably like a three or four or whatever. And he said he went out that day and birdied the last two holes to, let me just say, he doesn't want me to say the number he shot, but it was a salty number at Wingfoot. So I somehow, worst thing turned into a good thing for him. But I just want to let everybody out there know.
Is this guy Michael Jordan? He puts a little chip on his shoulder.
He is a chip on your shoulder guy. That's what Paul Azinger always talks about. Are you a chip on the shoulder guy? I'm going to add this to your list if you're listening to home. The old adage, you're not supposed to beat your boss in a sport. Also, don't predict their handicaps. It can only go poorly. It's a horrible idea. Don't just always say, are you a zero? Unless they played professional golf, then say, are you a plus six? And just leave it at that. Because I made my boss mad by saying he was a worse player than he is. And I play a lot of golf with him. So I felt terrible about that.
Yeah, it goes in the line of like, never ask if someone's pregnant, just wait for them to tell
exactly.
You. So never ask somebody's handicapped, just wait for them to tell you what it is.
I also had just had something to add. A friend of mine, our buddy Ashton Woods, said this to me the other day. And I think it needs to be in our favorite golf cliches that we did a few weeks ago. When you make birdie on the first hole, or maybe you birdie one and two, and somebody says, well, you can't birdie them all if you don't birdie one and two. I like that a lot. I think that's
Petey Papa George thinks it's bad luck for an amateur to birdie the first hole. He said it gives them too much, too high of expectations. I fight him on all the time, but he's adamant about it.
His final score is one better if he birdies the first hole.
That's what I said. You got to get your birdie. You got to make a birdie at some point. You can't just like, you know, run it by on purpose so you don't start a bad luck trend. I don't know. You need a birdie.
You got golf next week? You're headed out
golf
there on
next
the charter?
Week, flying Monday. Got Hilton Head, never played before, so
never
that'll
played
be
it.
An
okay.
interesting one. Yeah, it doesn't look like great weather Monday to Wednesday, so that's going to be tough to get the course. Joe and I talked about today. I'm just going to have to trust him. It's a super narrow golf course. Should be great for me. I mean, I talked to Xander about it on Tuesday. He said I'd really like it, you know, for my game. So, yeah, just going to practice again tomorrow. get ready for Monday. Hopefully somehow squeeze in 18 holes. You know, looks like thunderstorms, but yeah, just back to the grind. Hopefully have a better result, but yeah, looking forward to seeing a new golf course. That's always kind of fun and exciting.
Especially one like that. Unbelievable course.
Absolutely.
Hey, were you just the traveling and getting to go somewhere that wasn't home? Because I'm doing this tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. So you're going to Bandon.
I'm going to Bandon Dunes. Yeah. One of the reasons you agreed to record this on Saturday, which I appreciate. But how is like staying in a hotel room not being at your house you've been in for, you know, 15 weeks?
Shane, let me tell you.
Amazing.
I've played a lot of video games.
You Lacey, did that at home.
Way more. Yeah, because like in the middle of the day where my wife will make fun of me because I'll come in and like hang out there in the kitchen for like a little while, or in the living room, and we'll just chat, or she'll be doing her puzzle in the kitchen and I'll just like come over and like hang. She'll finally look at me and be like, are you just doing this so you can go play your games? And I lie and I say no. And then the answer is yes. Like I got to put in some FaceTime. But no, just kidding. But now it's like I come back. There's really not a lot on TV, and you know, there's no sports obviously, or there's something I literally just played, so I don't need to watch it. So I just like hop on the sticks and start grinding. I'm getting better every day. But yeah, so that's been fun. I don't love being in the hotel. I like I said last week, I already miss, you know, my wife and my dog a lot. It's has been a bit of a change, but it was good to get out, and you're gonna like it. You're gonna feel like a person again. Like,
yeah,
you're gonna feel
I
back to
it.
Normal. Flying's odd, not as odd as I thought. The airport is empty, which is sweet. Yeah, not so bad.
Last question, and then I'm going to go. I want you to guess, because I don't know this yet, and we'll find this out next week. You don't know much about Hilton Head. You've never played there before. I want you to take a guess, 1 through 18. What do you think the Aeon Risk Reward Challenge hole is?
Aeon Risk Reward Challenge will be number... There's a par 5 on the back. I think it's 12. 12.
Okay. 12. Well, hopefully it is.
This feels wrong. I think it's 13. I don't know. I have no idea.
I'll go 13. You go 12. How's that?
Okay. Deal.
All right. We will check with you guys next week.
Shane, play great, buddy.
I'm excited.
While you're up there, please wash your hands, but play great.
I'm going to wash them a lot. I'm excited to watch you play golf from Bandon. That's the plan.
Sounds good.
Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.